When the history of our times is written, it must record as supremely significant the physical, psychic, and social changes women have undergone in these exciting decades.
Amelia Earhart was speaking in the exciting decade of the mid-1930s, delivering a speech about women and science. Today marks the 75th anniversary of Earhart's successful flight from Honolulu to Oakland, California. She was the first woman to fly solo across the Pacific. The culture of the airplane cockpit we think of as male in this 21st century, but the image of the swashbuckling woman, Amelia Earhart, seems more remote than the 75 years since she made that solo flight and then some years later was lost at sea. To talk about why, though, that seems so remote, we have a real pioneer with us this morning. Major Nicole Melikowski is a senior pilot in the Air Force and just 5 years ago became the first woman to become part of the elite Thunderbird squad, also known as the Air Force Aerial Demonstration Squadron. She joins us from Washington, D.C. Major, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You don't have to call me sir. Do you see yourself in very much the tradition of Amelia Earhart? And when were you, did you first encounter her story growing up?
Well, I certainly hold the story of Amelia Earhart and all she accomplished in high esteem. And it's very difficult to think of myself in that same light. I decided I wanted to be an Air Force fighter pilot when I was 5 years old, and that's when I began my research into aviation and certainly the portion of women in aviation, Amelia Earhart being a big part of that. I remember coming to the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum when I was 12 years old and seeing the huge display on Amelia Earhart and her aircraft actually in there. And it really brought history to life, and it made me realize that, you know, my dream of becoming an Air Force fighter pilot, which I had as a young child, was something that was possible. And so I'm just proud to be part of the continuum of women in aviation.
You know, I was researching this and reading a little bit in advance of talking to you, and it seems to me that something changed, that the Amelia Earhart, the sort of woman swashbuckler adventurer, was a more familiar image, 50, 60, 70 years ago than it is now. What do you think changed in the generation of the, say, post-World War II era that made aviation much more a male kind of test pilot culture?
Well, I mean, I can see how you can look at it that way. I take it differently, having maybe researched a little bit more history or being closer to the women in aviation. As you may know, there were a lot of women who flew aircraft during World War II. They didn't fly in combat, but they were called the Women Air Force Service Pilots. And I think really with the flying of women during World War II, those WASP, Women Air Force Service Pilots,
right,
that was really the beginning of women in military aviation. And from that time in World War II, we started seeing advances. You know, when I was born in 1974, at that time there weren't any women that were allowed into pilot training. That wouldn't happen until 1979. So in the context of my lifetime, I think it's been a little bit more normal, or something that I've been very aware of, that there were women making inroads in aviation. So at the time of Amelia Earhart, it may have just been a cultural thing at the time where, you know, women weren't as well integrated, obviously, into flying. Remember, she wasn't the first woman to fly an aircraft by any means. She just became very, very famous for her exploits and for her accomplishments. But at the same time, women have been flying since before, you know, Amelia
sure.
Earhart, all the way up until now. So for me, in the context of my lifetime, I've always been very aware of the women who've been making the inroads for me and blazing trails before me.
What did it take for you to become a Thunderbird?
Well, in order to be a Thunderbird, you have to have, at the time I applied, a minimum of 1,000 hours as a fighter pilot or in fighter aircraft. And if you put that in the context of when women were allowed to start flying fighters, which was 1993, it takes you
wow.
some time. Yeah, that's when the Congress lifted the ban on women in combat aviation. I happened to be a sophomore at the Air Force Academy at the time, so my timing was perfect. It takes some time to garner that 1,000 hours to be able to apply, and as soon as I gained 1,000 hours as a fighter pilot in the F-15E, I went ahead and applied to the team, just like anybody else, male or female.
And were men
go ahead.
Were men in the Air Force helpers of your career, or were they competitors, and did you have to pit yourself against virtually all the men in the Air Force?
Helpers. I would not be where I am today and have had the opportunities or the successes that the Air Force has afforded me without my teammates, both male and female. Remember, I was one of the first women to start flying fighters for our country. That means that all of my wingmen, all of my instructors, hands down in fighter community, have been male. And if it wasn't for their positive support and their ability to treat me, you know, equally and fairly, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Well, Amelia Earhart said back in the 30s that while still greatly unnumbered, women are finding more and more opportunities for employment, and I hope this movement will spread throughout all branches and that women will come to share with men the joy of flying. Do you think that dream has come true in your lifetime?
I think that dream has come true in my lifetime. I live it. I'm a part of a wonderful organization like the Air Force, United States Military, where there are dozens of women who are out there sharing the dream of flying fighter aircraft and hundreds of women that are flying in our transport and our cargo aircraft all around the world, including in combat operations. So for me and within the Air Force, it's really operations as normal.
And Nicole Malachowski, your favorite maneuver in one of those fighter jets that you fly for the Thunderbirds?
Okay, well, flying on the Thunderbirds, I'd have to say probably the end maneuver, the bomb burst maneuver, where we all cross at the very end, 90 degrees out from each other. It's a lot of closure, a lot of velocity, a lot of things happen quickly. And if we can, when we would nail it and get it 100%, it was a beautiful thing.
And I'm sure if I was along with you, I would lose my breakfast if I was on that. Nicole Malachowski, senior pilot in the Air Force, just 5 years ago became the first woman Thunderbird, a member of the Air Force Aerial Demonstration Squadron, on this 75th birthday or 75th anniversary of Amelia Earhart's successful solo Pacific flight. Thank you, Major.
I wonder if we have any WASPs actually listening to our program.
I'm
if
sure
you have
do.
Any personal stories, give us a call. Today only we have a phone number that's special. It's 1-800-543-2543. Or you can always email us at mytakeofthetakeaway.org. We've been hearing from a lot of you about what Senator Harry Reid reportedly said before the election, that Barack Obama could become the nation's first black president because of his light skin and that he has no Negro dialect. What do you think? Is this really an electoral issue?
This is Deborah Rand. The Harry Reid comments actually were not outrageous because, in fact, what he was speaking about is white Americans and who they would vote for. And the Republicans, who are really the racists in this country, are turning around the whole story.
My name is Ryan. I'm calling from New Jersey. And I think that the supposed controversy about Harry Reid's comments are absolutely preposterous. The senator simply stated two facts that any rational individual could ascertain for themselves.
And for others, it's a story about race and place in this country.
Hi, this is Don Merrill in Salt Lake City. I think instead of being stuck on the question of whether or not it's appropriate to have the dialogue of whether Barack Obama's light skin and good speech is what got him elected, maybe it would be beneficial to also ask the question, why is it that whites are stuck on this idea that uppity blacks don't deserve to be in those kinds of positions? Because black people have a certain station, and they shouldn't aspire to be above it.
And for one of you, it's a kind of a story about history.
This is Joe from Atlanta, Georgia, a 63-year-old brown-skinned black man who says, it's funny how some things never change.
Let us know yours. There's some really, really
it's
amazing
comments.
It's the
voice of America right
1-800-543-2543. That's our number just today. Let us know your take or at mytakeofthetakeaway.org. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.